The Last Bohemian.
Hello everyone, Kate Hutchinson here. The Last Bohemians is back. We're back for International Women's Day 2021 with a very special lockdown episode featuring the pioneering, and I'm just going to go right ahead and say iconic, Marina Abramović. Before we lift off, this episode would not be possible without the support of Chloris, and I want to tell you a little bit more about them. I started my CBD journey, if you like, midway through lockdown last year, trying to find a way to feel less anxious, to sleep a little better. And I came across these beautiful looking CBD products. Chloris was started by a group of friends, much like The Last Bohemians was, and they were frustrated at the lack of quality, reliable products out there. What I love, apart from the fact that they're 100% natural and ethically sourced, is the range. You can get a bunch of great stuff, including oil drops, a hand sanitizer, very useful for obvious reasons, bath bars, balm, and a body oil, which has the dreamy combination of blood orange and vanilla, and smells unbelievable. Vogue recommends them, Elle recommends them, and so do we. The Last Bohemians listeners can get 20% off with the code LAST20 at chloriscbd.com. Thanks again to Chloris. And now to our Marina episode, which we recorded over Zoom between New York and Basingstoke at the start of the new year.
If you look through the history of art, people are afraid of three things. They're afraid of suffering, of pain, and mortality. I'm staging this kind of fears in the front of the audience and taking all my willpower to go through this actually fears in the front of audience. And I become the mirror. If I can do this to myself, they can do to their own self and actually free themselves from fear. You know, if you do something difficult and on the other side, you're liberated from fear, this is worth it. You're so happy on the other side. I was always interested to do things that are difficult and I'm afraid of. I was always interested to push my boundaries.
She's been called shocking, controversial, and trailblazing. But Marina Abramović doesn't care about any of that. The groundbreaking Serbian artist changed the way we view performance art and has spent the past half a century confronting the mental and physical limits of the body. She is constantly charging forward and ever evolving. Her early work in the 1970s is famed for its extremity, with performances where she might cut the communist star into her stomach, or, in a piece called Rhythmo, invite an audience to use weapons on her if they pleased. She's also known for her work with Ulay, her former lover and collaborator, with whom she travelled Europe in a van and shook up the art scene. You could say that their final piece together in 1988, where they each walked from one end of the Great Wall of China and met in the middle, was one of the most elaborate breakups of all time. Since then, Abramović has intertwined performance art with spirituality, shamanism, and pop culture. She trained Lady Gaga in her Marina Abramović method, which involves a lot of stillness and staring into space, and she turned her attentions to longer feats of mental endurance, including her infamous piece, The Artist is Present. At the Museum of Modern Art in New York in 2010, she spent 3 months sitting silently across from a constant churn of spectators. Over 1,000 people came to sit opposite her in the end. Many of them moved to tears, although some critics would say that she was turning attention-seeking into modern art. Marina is 74, but she's still innovating like she was 50 years ago. Although, like everybody, her grand plans were put on hold this past year. In this episode, she has some life lessons for us all about creative fearlessness, taking risks, and why she never compromises. I'm so pleased to have you, a fellow Sagittarian, on The Last Bohemians. Thank you so much.
And in all these eclipses, 13 moons, and all the mess of constellations right now.
Oh, really? What does it mean?
I have no idea, but I just know that, affect us somehow.
Well, I thought if anybody has some unique meditations on isolation and can give us some spiritual guidance for 2021, it's you, Marina. I mean, how have you coped with the uncertainty and the disappointment of the past year?
I try to avoid to be any kind of spiritual guidance or leader. I just think that the normality and simplicity of every life is what we have to learn now. Really, to enjoy simple things like wake up in the morning and have a cup of tea and sit next to the window and look at the flowers on your vase in the front of you or outside the landscape, or if you're in the countryside, see if there's any deers passing by. But I think the simplicity, what you need to learn, less technology and more simplicity, sitting still and thinking about, you know, your own being, it's something very uncomfortable. So I've been suggesting that kind of practice for a long, long time, since my Abramovich method came into function. But, you know, it's nothing to do and to talk, it's to do. You know, nobody can think for you. So this is why I don't like, you know, to tell people what to do. I want them to find, you know, for themselves what's the best.
One of my favourite aspects of that method is the idea of hugging a tree. Where did that idea come from? Why should we be hugging a tree?
I am very drawn to the tree since I was a child. I like the tree. I like how they smell. I like how they look. They're like living beings to me. I never will cut a tree in my life. Or even a dry tree, I still will not take out of the ground. Because something can happen to become life again. And I think hugging the tree, especially in isolation when you can't hug people, is such a great solution. You hug the tree, you have something which is living force, and you can feel the energy, but at the same time you can complain to the tree about everything what really matters to you. So the exercise is basically choose the tree of your like, hold the tree tight around your arms, and complain minimum 15 minutes. And you don't need to be worried about what other people think. It's, you know, the people don't easily hug other people. It's in our society, it's not so permitted. Not in my society, where I come from, Slavic Balkan culture, we hug people all the time.
It's been quite an unusual year for you in terms of legacy, it seems. You have got this big show at the Royal Academy in London, and that got put on hold. And then just before the pandemic hit, right at the start of 2020, your former lover and long-term collaborator Eli died. Did that change your perspective at all?
You know, last year, let's say, because it just happened, it was a very productive year for me. I really didn't feel these restrictions so much in my own work. I realized three projects, which in the three different mediums, which I never done before, making my own opera, Seven Deaths of Maria Callas, which we premiered for 500 people in Munich just before lockdown. Then the mixed reality work called The Life, which I use augmented reality to realize. And the third thing was the curating, directing, and presenting 63 artists from the 31 country on performance art for the Sky Arte as a television program. So I work with mixed reality, with opera, and television. This was the three medias that, if I didn't have lockdown, probably I would never do. So for me, it was really way how to actually you can find a way how to be creative without doing direct performance to the audience, because it's not possible. So this was very good. Ulay was sick for 10 years, and he was in and off the cancer all the time. And there was no surprise when he died, because, you know, it was inevitable. It was not possible to change the course of his illness. And, you know, we had ups and downs in our relationship. We have big court case, and it was never easy. And Ulay never was easy person to deal with. But on the end, we found a solution, and we found, you know, our lost friendship back. And that was very important to me. And there was sadness, especially that I could not go to the funeral because of the COVID. And also his exhibition in Amsterdam just opened, they also could not go to see because of restriction of traveling. So that really saddened me that I actually could not be part of that events and properly say goodbye to him.
You and Eli made some pioneering pieces together, like Rest Energy, where you pulled a bow and arrow taut towards your chest, and if you'd have let go, it could have gone right through your heart. I mean, how did that work shape the artist you are today?
I don't think the shape really, because first of all, before Uli, I made a very large body of work in my early years. Then I met Uli, and then we made a relational work. And actually, relational work was only depending on two people doing the work and performing together. And once when we separated in Great Wall of China, we stopped working. I actually stopped performing for a while, and I started doing transitory objects and actually giving possibility to the public to perform. And then much later, when I really stopped dealing with the separation and splitting with Uli, I started doing my own performances. So I don't think they're much to do with our early work, because I went back to my roots, and I went back to the Slavic culture, and I made pieces like Balkan Baroque to deal with war in Balkan. I made the pieces Balkan Erotic Epic, would deal with the fairy tales and tradition of the eroticism in my country. So I actually went back to my roots.
You spent decades trying to convince people of the seriousness and the validity of performance art. There's that famous quote, I think, when you were performing, was it Rhythmo? And you said, I was 23 and I was ready to die. What was all that about?
I really believe in that form of art. And there is a beautiful sentence of Bruce Nauman who said, art is a matter of life and death. It sounds melodramatic, but it's very true. If you take the art so seriously, like a matter of life and death, then you really can communicate some important messages to the public that you do this because it's a matter of life and death, because it's everything you put in. That's what it is. Art can transform. I don't think that art can change society, but can give the oxygen, can give the message, can show the different ways to see things like never before, and can ask the right questions. So art is very important part of the human being, you know, to give also the spiritual message, but also the most important to me is the kind of art who really can predict future.
I wanted to ask you about Lips of Thomas, because you performed that piece first in 1975 and then again in 2005 as you turned 60. And I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about that work and how it was perceived at the time.
Wow. Lips of Thomas is probably the most complex work I made at the time, because most of the time the performance are very simple and it's just one idea at a time and very little of the elements I use. But in this work, I use so much more material. I use honey, I use wine, I use a whip, I use razor blade. In the later version, I use the boots. I walk the Great Wall of China and across 2,500 kilometers. I use the cap of my mother from the war, communist cap with a 5-point star. I use so much more material. So really, it's biographical work. It's a mixture between my background I come from, where I was raised by my grandmother until I was 6 years old, and she was a very deeply religious woman, and most of the day spent in praying and being in the church, which take me, you know, as a young kid with her. And then the second part is, it's really to do with my heroic mother and father, who are both national hero, and their background. So I mix the actually religion with the, and spirituality with the communism, and then put some of my own biography into it. So the work, it's really complex, and the originally was made for 1 hour, and seven easy pieces. When I reperformed the piece in Guggenheim, I made the same piece 7 hours, which was incredibly demanding because I have to repeat everything 7 times over and over again, including cutting communist star on my stomach, including the whipping, the body, and so on. I really want to explore the limits of the pain and to see the kind of emotional, spiritual structure of the soul. It's been really complex, difficult piece. So in a retrospective, I showed the piece. We show one is black and white version in from 1975 and from 2005, it's a color version. So you see actually both versions at the same time and also aging the body, changing to attitude of performance and everything else.
How did it feel the second time around doing that piece where you're cutting the communist star into your stomach like you did?
But you know, when I perform, I don't talk about feelings. I really have a concept, and then I follow this concept as strictly as possible. And I come into the state of mind that actually the body is the material, the blood is the color, and the razor blade is the pencil. So my body become a canvas, and I only thinking about execution. The feelings come after I finish the performance, not during. It's very matter of fact, because if you get into your feelings, you can never finish the piece. So you have to have some kind of distance of you, personal self, you little Marina, and go into the something I call supernatural self, which you really are become object and subject of your own work. If you just look history of old cultures and you see how the old rituals and all the rites of becoming, you know, from the childhood into manhood, they all deal with the very heavy physical the rituals, who are dealing with so much pain, so much blood, so much violence. And you ask yourself, but why is this necessary? But because you really liberate yourself from the fear, and also by that, you actually, by understand what pain is, and understand that you can actually control your own pain, you understand that the pain is the door of different way how consciousness work.
Those early works that you made in the 70s still feel so subversive today. Why is that?
I have no idea. You know, I've been so cleverly criticized by these works, and now they're part of history of art. I only know that I have these ideas. I have to do them at the time, and each idea bring me to the new performance. And in the first part of my career, I was investigating physical body and limits of physical body. And then the second part of my career is about mental body. People say, oh, she's not anymore doing this great violent performances. Now she's just sitting on the chair. But I'd ask anybody, go and sit on the chair for 3 hours and don't move. Go sit 10 hours and don't move. And go and do this for 3 months and see what happens. It's so much more difficult than any physical thing I've ever done before. It's not violent, but it's unbelievable demanding, you know, because you need total willpower. You need complete concentration. And you need really to push your own limits, in mental limits, that are 10 times more difficult than any physical one.
When you did The Artist is Present in 2010 at MoMA, you went through some incredible training to get into the space that you needed to be for that, right? It was almost like military training or astronaut training or something.
I have to change my entire metabolism, you know, not to eat during the day, to eat during the night, and not to get low blood sugar and not to go to the toilet and stuff like that. Yeah, I did it this for 1 year. But even if I did this training for 1 year, every single day sitting on this chair could be the last one. You never knew, because it was so difficult. Second month was a hell for me. I remember that I would have somebody to massage me, but there was a time that I could not be touched because every single millimeter of my skin was in pain. It was very hard, but and then, you know, on the third month, the pain almost disappeared. become something else. And, you know, I wanted to show the strengths of performance. I want to show that the performance can move audience and actually to be transformative force. And this would happen. And I was very happy I did it.
When do you know that you've achieved what you wanted to achieve?
It's public. It's not me, it's public. Reaction of the public. Because public can feel fear, public can feel insecurity, public feel when something is not right, public feel when things are not good, and public feel when things are right and good. And, you know, my work is emotional, and always been. If I see tears in the eyes of the public, I touch them. I touch them in the way that they react. And I know I'm right. You see reaction of the public and you know that's it. That's really there. That energy dialogue is established.
I wonder how it feels when you know that something has moved so many people. For example, with The Artist Is Present, you know, we could see that people, the reactions that people were having to sitting opposite you. And then you read a review from an art critic that maybe doesn't quite get it. I'm curious to know how you deal with criticism, being this sensitive, vulnerable, emotional person.
I have such a, you know, long experience with bad criticism all my life. You know, the early works that are the part of history now, they've been so heavily criticized. And if I read this criticism and attack to on me, also personally, I will never leave home. And then somebody gave me this wonderful book about criticism from the centuries, where they have this the lots of different art, the critics writing about different things. So the one critic said that the Fifth Symphony of Beethoven was worse of the piece of music he ever heard. Somebody else said that Eiffel Tower was a disgrace to Paris. It would destroy the image of Paris and become a symbol. So when you read all these things, you take it in perspective. So, and then also, which is interesting, if somebody is incredibly aggressive and very angry, that means that you're doing something good, that actually there is a seed of something that in future can be relevant. So I have the very wise relation to criticism. Right now, I've been unbelievably criticized for the top, something that have nothing to do with anything, about being Satanist. Performances like the 5-point star, which is communist reaction, communist regime, is seen as a pentagram. My washing the wands, so the Venice Biennale related to the war in Balkan, is seen as a satanic act. So whatever I do, it can be translated in the wrong. So these years are this, you know. And so, you know, I just let it be. You know, on the end, the truth always survive, and honesty. First of all, I realize you can't do anything anymore 100% because that's not enough. You have to really, really be, you have to really figure out that how you can do something 150%, because that 50% extra is what everything changes. It's like you have to put the entire soul, the entire molecules of your body, every gram of energy into what you're doing. And then it's mathematical, cosmic kind of order. As much as you put in, as much as you get back. There is no 1 gram more or left. It's really the mathematical. So just, I always try to put this 150%. And that's what really, you know, makes change.
Does that mean that other things have fallen by the wayside? Have you found relationships tricky because of that mindset?
You suffer all the way, all the time. That's why you have lots of hotel lonely rooms. And after performance, nobody holding your hand. Because, you know, it's difficult. Relationships, children, family, all of this stuff, it's second thing. Because the work become the first and only thing in your life. In my mind, there was never a question to have a children. I never had this kind of call the women mostly have, that this ticking clock and you have to have a child or something will happen. I think that my very early in my in my life. It was a choice to be an artist. And to be an artist, you need every percentage of your soul and your mind, physical and mental body into this. And there's no space, because when you have a child, you have to share. And I was not ready to share. I think there's so many wonderful women who can be wonderful mothers. And I'm just decide to be an artist.
One of your performances that got put on hold this past year was, of course, your tribute to Maria Callas called The Seven Deaths of Maria Callas, where you're recreating all of her great opera death scenes. I know she's a bit of a hero to you. How do you identify with her?
I don't. I don't like to identify with anybody. I like to be myself. But I see similarity, you know, that's the difference. I see similarity that she can love so much that she can die from broken heart. I love so much I didn't die from broken heart. So I could have a, you know, kind of better perspective than she had. And she's Sagittarius like me. She had a very strong mother, which she was really basically torturing her, punishing her, and pushing her to succeed in her work. The same with my mother. Then something about emotions. She was so incredibly strong on the stage and so emotional in her life. The big mixture between strength and sensibility who really kills her, you know, as a woman. It's so similar to me. You know, I really, with relationships, it always was difficult to me because I was, you know, this strong person on the stage. And then the moment, you know, I am off stage, I become so vulnerable and emotional, so sensitive, and, you know, almost could not survive. So there is a lot of similarity in this.
I watched the Maria Callas documentary that got made a couple of years ago, and the press created this image of her that she was difficult, that she was a diva, that great D word. Can you relate to that at all?
You know, of course, it's kind of difficult, but, you know, I manage. And in her case, you know, she was difficult, but at the same time, you know, the film, there is one film, The Callas by Callas, where they show so much documentary material of her, which I really totally disagree with her. And I actually was angry seeing that she have a statement. She's saying, if I'm in love with a man, I don't need to sing anymore. And I can't accept that because she was ready to give her entire career for him. I was never ready to do for anybody that. But right now, I'm in a really good relationship at the moment, but the first time that somebody is not artist, which is really good, and have his own career and have the same passion about the work so that we don't need to explain to each other why we have, and nobody need to sacrifice anything, which is a good thing.
When I think about your work, I mean, sacrifice is an interesting word, but I think about freedom. What were you freeing yourself of?
From fears, any kind of fears. When you get into your own work, you have this incredible freedom. And also the freedom of an artist, that you can create work out of nothing, out of dust. And, you know, performance art is so immaterial form of art. And you can't touch it. You can't hang it on the wall like a painting. So all what is left is really feeling. You know, somebody last century asked me, but what is the future of art? And I said, for me, the future of art, it's dialogue between the artist and the public without object in between, just direct transmission of energy. And I still believe this is actually real future.
Were you ever in your career afraid of failure?
Oh, all the time. Failure is unbelievably important. I really worship failure because if you don't ready to fail, you can't experiment anything new at all. And that means you are repeating yourself. And if you repeat yourself, you lose respect for yourself. You know, you have to be able to every work to be surprised to you not to public. Public is second. This first to yourself, that you have to be surprised. And then to everybody else. So if you are going to the territory you've never been, of course you can fail, because it's hundreds of things can happen on that journey that will fail. But if you fail and you're doing that journey, it's incredible, valuable lecture that you learn in this failure. So the next one you fail, the next one you fail, and then one day you succeed. But I really think that the courage is very necessary for human being.
You've spent your career interested in spirituality. What has stuck with you the most?
You know, different way how they see the body, how they see life, how they see afterlife, you know, how they see, the purpose, what they are there for. So much difference than from our culture. You know, our culture it's very technological culture, but we don't see the potential in human body. We don't learn telepathy. We don't understand extrasensory perception. We don't understand, you know, our really limits and our source of energy that is incredible strong, that we can actually, you know, heal ourselves. We can remove obstacles if we want. And willpower, all of these things you can learn from Asian and from shaman and from that kind of cultures that we don't have the way to learn here.
So are your interests in the physical limitations of the body still the same as you get older? Do you still have the same relationship with your body?
Yeah, but the limitations are bigger, of course, because you get older. You wake up in the morning, you have pain here and you have pain there, and it's not like it was used to be. So you have to learn to live with your different type of the problems, your cure, and also to figure out, you know, what's your limits. I 3 years ago, I got Lyme disease, and it was unbelievable for me because from one day to another, I lost all my energy. I could not hardly move. Took me a long time to cure myself. Now I feel much better, but the Lyme disease was something that really showed me how fast the body can deteriorate. You really have to keep your spirit high all the time, no matter what. Positive attitude is everything, really. And also to have a lots of time to laugh about yourself first, and then about everything else. You have to have the humor in your life. You know, did you see that actually right now, during the epidemic, hardly any jokes around? There's no jokes. It's, the old jokes are about Trump, but not really jokes like used to be. So that's not good. We have to invent more jokes.
Can you tell me a joke, Marina?
You know, around, I only know one really, really Italian joke somebody told me about the coronavirus. So the Italian man go to the bathroom, he take a shower, he wash his teeth, he put the cream in his beautifully trimmed hair, fix his mustache, cut his nails, put the best, Giorgio Armani and all the cologne around his ears, dress the shirt with absolutely impeccably ironed, and he looked himself very satisfied in the mirror. So his wife come and she said, what the fuck you think you're going? I said, oh, just to the kitchen to make a coffee. That's the job. I feel free all the time, generally. I make my life the way I really want it to, with no compromises. You know, I don't have children, I don't have dogs, and I don't have the lazy husband at home. I don't have any of this. You know, I really wake up in the morning and I really want to do what I want. And somehow that feels really good. Even with this coronavirus, I find my own space that I can function. I don't feel I'm traumatized by this. So I think right now in my life, I'm more happy than I was when I was young, much more, because I become wise. You know, age gives you that which really, you know, each, you know, sucks for the other ways, but, you know, to be wise, it's something that I really appreciate in this moment.
Would you want to go back to any point in your life?
Absolutely not. Oh my God, it was so hard to get here. I don't want to go back anywhere.
The Last Bohemians.
You've been listening to The Last Bohemians. I'm your host, Kate Hutchinson, and this episode was produced by the brilliant Holly Fisher. Thank you to our sponsor, Chloris. Don't forget that 20% off code. And thank you to everyone at the Marina Abramovic Institute, to the Lisson Gallery, and to my parents, Tony and Andy, who helped me build an incredible DIY studio in their spare room for this episode. And thank you, of course, to you, the listeners. We are so grateful for all of your support and messages. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you've just found us, there are two full series to get stuck into. We'll be back with more in 2021. But for now, follow us on Instagram @TheLastBohemiansPod. See you soon.